talking today about the halachas of Dalai Lama. Let's start with the esrog. So the first question that you have to ask yourself about an esrog is whether it's a murkav. Is it a grafted esrog or is it a natural esrog? The experts point out that it's very common to graft an esrog tree because by nature the esrog tree is weak. So the farmers are concerned that the tree is not going to survive, it won't be able to produce good fruit. So they graft it with other trees to strengthen it. But most poskim assume that an esrog that's murkav is possible for the mitzvah. What's the reason for that? So some want to say that it's nefta ba'avera, because you did an avera, it's also to graft the tree, so you're not allowed to use the chefza for a mitzvah. Others say it's because of choser, it has a shame esrog, but it's missing a little bit from the esrog. It has other things in it too, so it's choser, and choser is possible for the mitzvah. You need a lekichatama. The Magen Avraham, in Simen Tov Reish Mem Tes of Kotnachov Gimel, gives the simplest reason. He says that an esrog hamurkov is not called an esrog. It just doesn't have a shame esrog at all, and that's why you can't be out to the mitzvah with it. They tell a story that once they asked Rav Moshe Soloveitchik why an esrog hamurkov is possible. So he opened up a Shulchan Aruch and he pointed to the top of the page, and it says Devarim hapsulim be'esrog, Devarim hapostlim be'esrog. He says the first thing is it has to be an esrog. If it's not an esrog, then there's nothing to talk about. So he is assuming like this third approach, that a murkav is going to be possible because it doesn't have a shame esrog at all. How can you tell the difference between an esrog hamurkav and a regular esrog? If a murkav is possible, so then we're going to be in trouble. We never know if the esrog that we have is a kosher esrog or not. So the Mishnah Berurah, in Simen Tov Reish Mem Ches of Katan Samach Hei, at first Mishnah Berurah on the Mar Makoma sheet, in the front of the packet, if you're following along, the Mishnah, it's actually a mistake. It's not Samach Tes, it's Sivkot and Samach Hei. You can correct it. Mishnah Berurah quotes a Chuvas Ramo, who says that there are actually four simonim for an esrog hakosher. There are four simonim that can identify an esrog as a non-murkav. First of all, the esrog hakosher has blitas, it has bumps in it. Secondly, the ukits, the lower stem, is shakua, it's sunken into the esrog. We know that an esrog has a pitim on top and an ukits on the bottom. So the Ramo says that an esrog hakosher is going to have an ukat shakua. The ukat, the bottom stem, which actually is the stem that attaches the esrog to the tree. It grows in that way, that the ukat is attached, not the pitim. So the ukat is shakua. Thirdly, the klipa, the peel of the esrog, is thick, as opposed to a lemon. The peel of a lemon is thin. And finally, the garinim, the seeds, are vertical. If you look in some of the picture books, Rav Yechiel Michel Stern has wrote a beautiful Sefer Kashrus Dalet Minim that was printed originally in Tovshin Nun Beis, that you know broke new ground in this territory. He has all the color pictures of the glossy pages. It's much easier when you look at the pictures inside. It explains everything very clearly. So these are the four simanim that the Ramah gave in a tshuva as to how you can identify the esrog hakoshin. Right, the blitas, the ukashakua, the klipa is thick, and the garinim, the seeds are vertical. So it would appear from the Mishnah Berurah, he suggests, that according to the Ramo, all you have to do is check the simonim of your esrog, right? Check esrogim from your grove, and if I guess, you know, most of the esrogim from the grove have these simonim, then you can assume that your esrog is also kosher. That's what the Badatz does. The Badatz, the typical esrog from the Badatz, Yerushalayim, they're machshir based on the simonim that the Ramo gave. They go to each grove and they take a representative sample from throughout the grove, and if they see that the esrogim follow the simonim that the Ramo set forth, so then they declare that grove, that pardes, is kosher. The Chasam Sofer is machmir. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Chasam Sofer in a tshuva, where the Chasam Sofer says that you can only be machshir and esrog based on a mesorah. If you don't have a mesorah, you can't be machshir. So that's what prompted a lot of people to try to find the mesorah. The Chasam Sofer himself said that the Yanava esrogim, Yanava I think is from Italy, the Yanava esrogim have a mesorah that their esrogim cherim. The Chazon Ish, we know the Chazon Ish had a mesorah with the esrogim that he felt were cherim, and people took from the Chazon Ish's trees, from the trees that grew the esrogim that he thought were kosher. So they planted groves, and that's where the Chazon Ish esrogim come from. It's not so clear how the Mesorah begins. The Chazon Ish knew the Mesorah that a particular esrog was kosher. Some say that the Chazon Ish simply saw a tree that was off to the side. It was an abandoned tree. It actually wasn't growing so nicely. wasn't such a healthy tree, so he figured no one could have possibly grafted that tree because it wouldn't look that way. You know, it wouldn't look so good. So he said this esrog tree, you know, must be kosher because it just looks like it's not grafted. So people took and taka the original chazanish esrogim did not look so nice, but they took these esrogim, they took from that tree, and they tried to work it well. They fertilized it. They did everything they could to make the esrog tree better without grafting it. And slowly but surely, the esrogim got better and better. So now you can get a chazanish esrog that looks beautiful. It costs a lot of money, but it looks beautiful. It's not like the original tree. It's a question exactly what the word mesorah in this context means. There's some kind of mesorah, but it's hard to pin down exactly where the mesorah begins. But that's why a lot of machmir, many people are machmir, to try to get an esrog that's not just kosher based on the simonim, but rather there's some kind of mesorah that maybe it comes from an original esrog tree that was not grafted. Okay, that's in terms of murkav. The most famous psul by an esrog is if the pitum falls off, nitla pitmasa. That most people are familiar with. The children are trained that way in the preschool that it's very important that the pitum shouldn't fall off. So, you know, everyone knows that that idea. What does it mean that the pitum fell off? That's a little more complicated. The Rishonim talk about what does it mean that the pitum fell off. So Rashi and the Rambam and most Rishonim on the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Daled Amid Beis that has this idea that Nitla Pitmasa is possible. If the pitum falls off, it's possible. If the ukats falls off, the esrog is still kosher. Only if the pitum falls off. What does it mean that the pitum fell off? So Rashi and Rov Rishonim learn that it means that the stem fell off as well, not just the shoshanta. The top of a pitum that comes out of the esrog is like a ball on top of the stem. So that ball is called the shoshanta. So Rashi and Rav Yishonim hold that nitla pitmaso doesn't mean just that the shoshanta fell off, the little top, the little ball that comes off of the pitum. No, the eights fell off too. How much of the eights, how much of the stem has to fall off for it to be considered nitla pitmaso? So the Magen Avraham writes that the whole stem has to fall off. A tremendous kula, right? That it's not nitla pitmaso unless not only does the shoshanta fall off, the ball on top, the kadur as they call it, the kadur lamala, but the whole stem has to fall out. The whole stem has to come off. Then it's nitla pitmasa zavda magnevra. But if all you have is the shoshanta fell off, and even a little bit of the stem came off with the shoshanta, that's not enough. It's not nitla pitmasa, still kosher. Still kosher. Until the entire stem falls off. That's the Magen Avraham's approach. Not everyone agrees. The Ran has a chiddush. The Ramah quotes from the Ran that people are knowing that even if the shoshanta falls off on the top, it's also pasul. That's also nitla pitmasa. The Ran got this from his understanding of the Rif, but the Mishnah Berurah says it's a mistaken understanding of the Rif. The Ramah says that you should be machmir for that Ran, but the Mishnah Berurah says it's really not so posher that's pshat in the Rif. But Iker Adin, the Mishnah Berurah thinks you can follow the opinion of the Magen Avraham that unless the entire stem falls off, that's not nitla pitmasa and it's kosher. Mishnah Berurah says that if you have a better esrog, you have an esrog where the pitum hasn't fallen off at all, the shoshanta hasn't fallen off, better to take that esrog. But if this is the only esrog that you have, you bought this esrog and you don't have another esrog, he says you don't have to borrow an esrog from your friend. You can be yotze with this esrog as long as you have a little bit of the stem still remaining of the esrog. That's not nitla pitmaso, and that's kosher. It's kosher. So certainly if a shoshanta falls off in the middle of Yom Tov and someone comes to you and asks a shayla, can I take the esrog? If the stem is still there, you still see part of the stem, l'chori, you could be makel for them. You don't have to drive them crazy that they have to borrow an esrog from someone else. According to the Mishnah Berurah, me'ikar adin, as long as there's a little bit of the stem, it's okay. L'chatchila, before Yom Tov, something happened to the esrog, you want to be yotze Yom Tov Rishon, you want to be yotze the mitzvah kedasu kedin, afshar, maybe it might be appropriate to try to get a different esrog. But to the evidence, if a person is in the situation, we can be makel for him that he can make a bracha on the esrog because really, me'ikar adin, it's kosher. Some point out that after Yom Tov Rishon, after the first day Yom Tov, Chalamoid certainly, but you know, even what we call Yom Tov Sheni might have a din of Yom Tov Rishon, it's a Sveka de Yoma. But after Yom Tov, when it comes to Chalamoid, you certainly can be makel if the pitum falls off. Maybe even if the pitum falls off completely. Maybe if there's no, even if there's no stem, you still can be makel to make a bracha on the esrog. Why? What's the nature of this psul? If the pitum falls off, the esrog is pasul. What's the nature of that psul? So we find when it comes to the Esrog, there are two types of psulim. It comes to the other meaning as well. We find sometimes there's a psul, what's called chaser. Something is missing from the min. It's not a lekachtem lechem. It's not lekicha tama. It's chaser. And sometimes we find things which are possible because it's not hada. It's not hada. It's not chaser, but it's not hada. The poskim point out there's a very big chilik between these two types of psul. Gemara and Daflam and Vav and Sukkah writes that Rabbi Chanina was matuba v'nofikba, that he ate from the esrig after the first day Yom Tov, and he was yotzi with that esrig. Obviously, he did this so that the talmidim saw the din. Right? There was no point; he didn't have to eat from the esrig, but he did it to show what the halacha is. So he took a bite out of the esrig, and then he was yotzi with that esrig after Yom Tov Rishon. Cholamoy. Why? So clearly from the Gemara you see that chaser is only a psul on the first day of Yom Tov, not for the Zechel HaMikdash of the other days. It's only a psul on the first day. How about when it comes to hadar? Is hadar a psul only on the first day or on all the other days? That's the machlokas in the Rishonim. Chaser is a Gemara. The chaser only passes on the first day of Yom Tov. But hadar is not poshut. Tosus and Daf Chavtesam at Beis and Sukkah writes that if an esrog is yovesh, if it's dried out, it lacks hadar, that's pasul kol shiva. Tosfos holds that hadar is different than chaser. Hadar pasuls kol shiva. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says that hadar is no different than chaser. It only pasuls on the first day of Yom Tov. Tosfos assumes that hadar is more fundamental than chaser. Hadar is part of the Ikar HaMitzvah. It's like taking dalet minim. What? So on the other days of Yom Tov, all you need to take is three minim? No, dalet minim is part of the Ikar HaMitzvah. The fact that each individual, l'kicha l'chalecha ve'echad, each individual has to take dalet minim, that's part of the Ikar Mitzvah. No one's going to be makel to say that you can be yotzi b'shlichas, you know, after the first day Yom Tov. That's part of the Ikar Mitzvah. The Tosfos says hadar is the same. Creates hadar, that's part of the Ikar Mitzvah. The dalet minim have to be hadar, they have to be beautiful. A certain basic level of being beautiful. So therefore, if it's not hadar, then that's going to pass a kol shiva. It's not like chaser. Chaser is extraneous. Chaser, Shaul, it has a shame esrog on it, it's just missing something. That's not the Ikar Mitzvah. But the Rambam says no. The Rambam says that Hodr and Chaser are the same. They only pass on the first day, not on the other days. How do we pass in the Maisa? So the Mechaber Amor in Simen Tov Resh Mem Tes Sif Hey, they have a Machlokas. This is the last line of the Mar Makomos by the Esrog. Tov Resh Mem Tes Sif Hey, the Mishnah Berurah there. They have a machlokas, had a paskin, the mechaber paskins like the Rambam, the Kula, and the Ramah, paskins the Chumra, like the Balei Tosfos. So the Mishnah Berurah says, let's go back to the pitim, nitla pitmasa, on the other days of Yom Tov. He says, he thinks that you can take such an esrog, even if the pitim falls off completely, there's nothing left, even from the stem, you should be able to take that esrog. Why? Because one of shach, there's a svek sveka. Either the halacha is that nitla pitmasa is only possible because of chaser. If it's only possible because of chaser, which happens to be what the Ramah writes, that it's only possible because of chaser, then it doesn't possible the rest of the days of Yom Tov. It's only a psul on the first day. And even if you'll tell me that nitla pitmaso is possible midin hadar, maybe the halach is like the Ramam and the Mechaber, that hadar only passes on the first day and not on the other days. So there's a svek sveka that allows you to even make a bracha on an esrog that doesn't have a pitim on the other days of Yom Tov. Cholamoy. After the first day, the first 2 days, let's say. Right? That either the psul of nitla pitmaso is midin chaser, and that we know, the Gemara says that only passes on the first day. And even if it's possible midin hadar, maybe the halach is like the Rambam, who says that there's no difference between hadar and chaser, that even hadar only passes on the first day. So you have a svek sveka lahokil to make a bracha on this esrog on the other days of Yom Tov, on Cholamoy. Yes?
So if we say, like the Rambam, that it's only puzzle, it's puzzle from the hitter perspective, from the first day forward, then should we not be able to say that even on the first day...
The Rambam says that hodder only puzzles on the first day, not on the other days.
So if something happened to your esrog on the first day, and so we could say, okay, you know, according to the hitter mitzvah, better not to use it, but really, you know... You can still be motzi the mitzvah if your esrog was ruined on the first day.
No, so there's a din of hider mitzvah and there's a din of hader. Hader is a special halacha that's not just hider mitzvah to beautify the mitzvah, but it's actually ma'akev in the mitzvah. So on the first day, hader is certainly a problem. Question is, on the other days of Yom Tov, is it going to be a problem? So according to the Rambam, it's not. It's more similar to chaser that on Chol HaMoed, hader is not going to be a problem. It's not going to be ma'akev in the mitzvah. Yes?
You mentioned that we're able to say bracha on
the... Is that okay? You have a follow-up. I'm sorry. Yeah, follow-up. Excuse me, just one second. Yeah.
So then why would we have... Chaser is a level up, right? It's even worse than hadar.
No, chaser is less than hadar. Meaning, chaser definitely only passes the first day. You can take a bite out of the esrog and take the esrog after the first day. Question is, if the esrog is yavesh, if it's dried up, would you be allowed to take it on the other
day? In other words, there are two different simanim.
Two different psulim in the esrog.
Psulim on this, right.
Exactly, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I was wondering if do you say bracha on esrog on Yom Tov Rishon if the pitta falls off entirely?
If the pitta falls off entirely, would you make a bracha? So l'chora not. Right, l'chora to make a bracha, you'd need a svek sveka. That's what he's assuming. On Yom Tov Rishon, everyone says that if the pitum falls off, it's pasul. Right? The question is Yom Tov Sheni, or after. It's difficult to say. I just don't want anyone to get confused. What we call Yom Tov Sheni might be Yom Tov Rishon. It's a sveka the Yom. I'm saying after Yom Tov, Chol HaMoed. Whether on Chol HaMoed one can take an esrog that the pitum fell off completely and make a bracha, so that the Mishnah wants to say, maybe have a svek sveka to be mati even to make a bracha. Yes.
Second day of Chag
in Chutz Laaretz is a shaila whether it has the same din as the first day of Chag. So I'm not talking about the second day of Chag. I'm talking about Chol HaMoed, which definitely doesn't have a din of svek of the Yoma.
In terms of svek of the Yoma, we don't apply that svek of the Yoma to the svek of the Shulchan Aruch.
Right, so apparently that's viewed differently. That's not what it's the perversion of Shulchan Aruch that Yom Tov Sheni is the din of Yom Tov Rishon. The Mishnah Berurah says that many are machmir to assume the psulim of Yom Tov Rishon apply to Yom Tov Sheni as well. It's only after Yom Tov Sheni, so then we're willing to be mekel. So you're saying, but on Yom Tov Sheni also, it's also only a suffix. It's not clear. There are some who say that Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias has a din of a takana de rabbanan. It's not just a suffix. If we assume it's a takana, then maybe you can't be mitzari if that's the svek sveka. Maybe that's the pshat. So that's why in Chol HaMoed will be mekel for the svek sveka, but on Yom Tov Sheni itself we won't. Okay. The Rama quotes that if there never was a pitum on the esrog, if the esrog grew without a pitum, then it's kosher. There's someone to suggest that the Rama l'shitasa, the Rama hold nitla pitmasa is possible because of chaser. So if it's pasul because of chaser, then there's no reason to pasul if it never grew like that. It's not chaser. It never was there to begin with. If you hold it's pasul because of hadar, it's not as beautiful. There's a certain basic level of beauty that the esrog has to have. So then just because it didn't grow with a pitum, why is that necessarily hadar? Maybe if you assume that an esrog has to have a pitum to be hadar, then if it doesn't have a pitum, it's not hadar. But if the whole problem is chaser, you can't say something is chaser if it never grew with the item to begin with. So someone has suggested, Ramallah Shitaso, that Nitla Pitmaso is possible because of Chaser. So the Ramah says that if it grew without a pitum to begin with, so then the esrog is going to be kosher. And that's how we have a lot of the esrogim we have actually don't have a pitum on it. So how can we take such an esrog? There's no pitums. It's just as bad as if the pitum fell off. The esrog is not just as bad. If it grew that way to begin with, meaning, normally the esrog grows with a pitum, but then it falls off by itself. Due to the sun or some other elements, I'm not an expert in this, but the pitum falls off. So if it falls off naturally, not that it was yanked off, it was pulled off, right? Or it fell down, and as a result of the pitum fell off, it falls off naturally. So that means that the esrog grew without a pitum. So then the esrog, according to the Rama, is going to be kosh. Yes.
So how can we tell the difference? If there's a way to tell the difference, then fine. If not, then maybe there should be a takana.
You have to be an expert. So the farmers protect their fields, and they testify that these esrogim grew without pitums, and the experts can tell you which esrog grew without a pitum. They can look at the esrog and determine whether it fell off after it was taken off the tree or it fell off before it was plucked from the tree. Yeah.
Just to clarify, so if the soul is hadar, so then it might be at least not ideal to have a pitumless esrog.
Right, so that's what some say. Rav Schneebald in his Torah's Dalet Minim, he quotes that some ask that if you hold Nitla Pit Maso is possible because of Hodr, and there are those who hold that. I don't want to get involved in all the Shitas. Some say that Nitla Pit Maso is possible because of Hodr. So they say, how can the Ramah be Mekum? Right, so if you're going to be Machmer for all the different Shitas, so then it could be that a pitumless esrog is not as lechatchila as the other esrog. Some people are actually Machmer, they try to get an esrog with a pitum. So it's probably based on this. Now they assume if the pitum falls off, it's possible because of hadar. It's possible because of hadar. Just because the esrog grew without a pitum doesn't make it hadar. If an esrog, if the pure form of an esrog, the perfect form of an esrog has a pitum, right? You look at the classical picture of an esrog, they'll show an esrog with a pitum. That's the mesorah that we have. You know, it's only been growing without a pitum, you know, in the recent past. So maybe we treat that. Maybe we treat the esrog without a pitum as not being hadar. If that's the case, then even if it grew without a pitum to begin with, maybe it's still not hadar. And to be choshish for such a shita, maybe perhaps we should take an esrog with a pitum. Yes?
The Rebbe mentioned towards the beginning that if pitum falls off, it's possible, but
the oketz falls off, is kosher. There's no problem.
Oketz refers to
what? That's the bottom stem. That's the stem from which the esrog grows from the tree. It's attached to the tree through the oketz. The esrog starts growing like this with the pitum up, and then as the esrog gets heavier, so then I think it sort of turns downward. Because you're supposed to take the esrog with the pitum up, right? And you're supposed to take the esrog the way that it grows, so it must grow up. So even if it turns a little bit, but initially it grows up, so that's why we take the esrog that way. What's the din of shinui mara? Let's say there's a discoloration on the esrog, moving along to the third line in the Maror Makos. So the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis in Sukkah says that if olsa chazozes al miyuto b'makom echad kosher, if you have a chazozes, you have like a blemish, a growth on the esrog in one place, on the miyut of the esrog, so then it's kosher. But if it's mishnayim or shloshim makom, was about two or three places, then it's pasul. Havalei kimenumer, then it looks spotted, and that's not called hadar. So shinui mara pasul if it's on two or three spots in the esrog. But if a chazozes is on one spot, if it's on b'miyut ha'esrog in one spot, then it's kosher. This is not only chazazis, but the Rosh points out that even a mara shochar, mara lavan, if you have a black spot or a white spot on the esrog, that's also a shinui mara, that also will pasel. If it's on shnayim or shloshim makomos, it'll pasel because it's menu. What does it mean, shnayim or shloshim makomos, two or three spots? That's not rova the esrog. So the Rosh quotes from the Ravid that we're talking about that the spots are separated from each other in such a way that if you connect the dots, that will include rove of the surface area of the esrog. Right? So the spots are separated. If the spots are all together, so that's still not possible. It's not menumer unless it's on rove of the shatach of the esrog. So the Ravid says that this, we're talking about Bechai Gavna, that the spots are separated from each other, so that if you connect the spots, you know, they sometimes have pictures, you cut the esrog in half, and if you look at the spots in the different parts of the esrog, I'm going to draw a picture. I'll draw a picture. Right, you have your esrog over here, the oketz, the pitum, something like that. Right. So if you cut the esrog in half, and you have a similar esrog over here, and that's the other half of the esrog. So if you have like a spot over here, and a spot over here, and a spot over there, so if you connect all the dots, that's going to be a significant part of the esrog. Right? You have another dot. So, right, you might actually be getting rove of the esrog. Whatever. You can figure it out, right? So if by connecting all of the dots that's going to involve rova the esrog, then that's possible. That's a shinui mara. What's the din on the chotem? What's a chotem? So the Gemara says b'chotmo afilu b'mashu possible. A shinui mara, the chazazis on the chotem of the esrog, even b'mashu is going to be possible. What is a chotem? So the Rambam is a big makel in the chotem. The Rambam assumes that the chotem, let's draw it a little bit better. Rambam says that the chotem is the area where the pitum grows from. This top area. That top area, that's the chotem. That's the chotem. So if you have a chazozis or a shinui mara, big black spot on the chotem of the esrog, the Rambam would say that's a problem. Most poskim assume, the Rosh, and most poskim assume, the Bali Hara assume, that it's from the part that the esrog starts to slant upward. You have an esrog, so it's pretty flat toward the middle, let's say. I mean, every esrog looks different, but then it starts to slant up. The Rosh says that from the place where it starts to slant up, not just the top where the dad is coming out of, where the pitim is coming out of, but from the place where it starts to slant up, that's already called the chotim. And the Chasam Sofer says that the Mori Hora, that the poskim follow the Rosh, not the Rambam. That they're more machmir, that if you have a shine mare, you have a chazazis, a black spot, or something on the chotem from the part that the esrog starts to slant up already, that's going to be possible. That's going to be possible. Comes the Magen Avraham and quotes the Mabit, that the only time that a chazazis passels is if it's nikar la'ayin. It has to be recognizable to the eye. When you hold the esrog in your hand, not when you put it up to your eye. You hold your esrog at a normal distance. Mabit says that it has to be nikar la'ayin in order for it to passel, for the chazazis or the shinimara to passel. And the emphasis is, it's very mistaber, because why is the chotem worse than the rest of the esrog, that there even the mashu passels? That's because it's nikar la'ayin. That the chotem is a place where people see it much, much more readily. So the Mabit says that it has to be seen. If you have to put it up to your eye, if you have to use a magnifying glass in order to see the chazaz, to see the black spot, so then it's not nikar la'ayin. Why should that passel? Why should it passel b'mashu? It won't passel b'mashu on the rest of the esrog anyway, but on the chotem it'll passel b'mashu, but only if it's nikar la'ayin. If it's not nikar la'ayin, there's no reason to passel. It makes a lot of sense. So why do you see people looking with the magnifying glass? They check an esrog, they come with the magnifying glass. What's the purpose of that? L'chora, the answer is that who says that we follow the eyes of the person looking at the esrog? Maybe we follow the eyes of the standard individual, and as a person ages, they can't see as well. They get glasses, and the glasses get thicker and thicker and thicker. So the dayan who's passing on that esrog feels that he can't see properly. If he were to see properly, he wouldn't need a magnifying glass. And some also use the magnifying glass to see if the esrog is chaser. That's a metzias, that you have to see, whether it's chaser or not. But even to see the spots, some people feel like they can't see properly. They can't see properly. Their vision is not as good. You know, they can't read well, so they're going to take the glasses off in order to see anything because they can't really see properly. So they put a magnifying glass so that they'll be able to see properly. It's not that there's a chiv to look at the magnifying glass. It's that you have to have a good set of eyes, a regular set of eyes. I ain't the dayan el masha she'ino v'ro'os. That means that the dayan has to judge based on what he sees, but if it's something that's really related to his eyes and not just to his chokma, he has to be able to see with a good set of eyes in order to paskin appropriately. Okay, sometimes you find in the esrog what's called bletlach, or as there are, yes, I'm sorry, question.
Would that mean that if somebody, let's say a dayan were to find with the magnifying glass would the move that be to ask somebody who he assumes has regular sight, can you actually see this? Meaning,
because
there's a certain...
Right. So, L'chora, based on...
More than regular.
Right. Based on what I'm suggesting, maybe he should do that, but what they generally say is it's better to look for another one. I mean, then the people who are looking for these spots, normally the question is not whether it's puzzle or not. Right? We're not normally looking for a black spot. We'll get to other colors, brown and other things. If we're looking for hither, right, is there a brown spot? Is there no brown spot? What's the color of the spot? You know, what's going... So... I guess the pshat is they say it's better to take another one. It would be better for them to say, look, to me it looks a little bad. Go to someone with a good set of eyes. It becomes a little more complicated. So I think that's why they just say that if to me with the magnifying glass I feel like it's a black spot, a black dot, so then it's better to take a different esrog.
Is the Mabit only by? We're saying only by.
It's about chazazis.
Chazazis on a chodim, because you could say again, like the rush is sheer. I mean, some of the spots I might not be able to see, some of the meaning. Is it only talking about on the chotem, or is it anything which is a shinimar?
I think he's talking about a chazazis, and he says any other shinimar. So, but again, on the rest of the esrog, you're talking about rover the shatach of the esrog. It's got to cover rover the shatach of the esrog. So what do you mean that it's not going to be nikar la'ayin? What?
He's saying it's the dots that you draw on the board with tiny dots.
Oh. The dots on the board with tiny dots.
Like,
oh, I see. On the bottom of the esrog.
I don't know exactly how to get the rove, but I'm just wondering if it was on the rove shetach of the esrog. However, you could have been out of
it. You have black dots on the bottom, but the dots were not nikar la'ayin on the bottom of the esrog.
Yeah.
I don't see why there should be a difference between the chotem as opposed to the other parts of the esrog in terms of looking at what you see, right? It has to be dots that you can see. So l'chora, the dots have to be visible to the eye, even on the bottom of the esrog. And then if they're visible enough, then we'll connect the dots, and if it's on most of the surface area of the esrog, then it'll pass. Sometimes you find on the Esrig scabs that are called bletlach, or the Rama calls them a blummel. There are different phrases for this. It's like a scab. When the thorns hit the Esrig, it creates a blemish, and when it heals over, just like in a human being, there's a scab. So when the Esrig makes a scab, and sometimes the scabs stay on the Esrig. They actually remain even when you cut them off the tree. I guess the Esrig could repair itself if you keep it on the tree long enough. I'm not sure what the mitzvah is, but some of the asurim that we have, they have these bletlach, these scabs. So what's the din of a bletlach, of a bletel? So the achronim of a shayla, let's say the bletel is, you can feel it. If you run your hand along the asur, you can feel the bletel. The Shulchan Aruch writes that a chazazis will pasel if it's higher than the surface area of the asur. You can feel the chazazis. It's something significant. Right, that's how he describes what the chazazis is. So the achronim say, how about a bletel? A bletel, is that a chazazis? Is that what we're talking about? So it's a big machlokas. Someone to say that the bletel is mamish like a chazazis, it's a scab. So just like if you have a chazazis, a real discoloration, a growth on the esrog, that's certainly not a mara esrog. So just like the chazazis is not a mara esrog, it'll passel on the chotem b'mashu, and passels on the rest of the esrog if it'll be on rov of the surface of the esrog. So to the bletel, it's the same. Rama quotes from the Trumas Hadeshim that a bletel is different. A bletel is mara esrog. It's a mara esrog. It's normal. We see many esrogim that have bletlach. It's not true, right? It's not right. We see many esrogim with bletlach. So the Trumas Hadeshim says that's not a shini mara at all. You can have any number of bletlach on the esrog. You can have it on the chotem. You can have it on the bottom. Even in rov shatach of the esrog, it's not going to pass because it's not called a shini mara. It's a big nafkamina. If we assume bletel is a shinimara, so then on the chodm of the esrog, a bletel b'mashehu will pasel. If you go like the Trumas Hadeshim, which is how the Rama passes, then a bletel is not going to pasel. It doesn't pasel b'mashehu on the chotem, and it won't pasel even on rov of the shatach of the esrog below the chotem. How about black dots? This is very common, that you have dots, not a black spot, but black dots, little black dots. Is that a problem? So many poskim point out that according to the Trumas Hadeshim, maybe something that's normal is not called a shini mara at all. So maybe black dots shouldn't be a problem. Maybe all that the Shulchan Aruch and the Rishonim mean when they say the Rosh that said that shachar is also shini mara, he means a black spot, not a black dot. Black dots, we have a lot of dots on the Esrogim. Others say no. A black dot can also pass on. Brown dots don't passel, but shachar means any kind of black dot, even if it's not a big spot, that also is a shini mara. Black spots are not common. Even black dots are not common. Brown? Esrogim have a lot of brown spots. There's no question about that. There are some who want to say that black should passel if it's a black dot on the chotem, b'mashu. A brown dot, that's not so common. A brown dot is very common. So brown dots don't passel, but a black dot would passel. So it's not clear. Most poskim would say try to avoid the black dots. Rabbi Shechter is very fond of pointing out that the Bikurei Yaakov is quoted by the Mishnah Berurah saying that the only type of black that passels, that's considered a Shini Mara, is black machmas ipush, because of decay. If you don't have black that's because of the esrog decaying, the Bikurei Yaakov wants to say that's not called black. Black means that it's decaying. Right? Like if someone has a gangrenous limb, cholila, right? So it starts to turn color, it turns green, it turns black. That shows that it's dying. So the Bikurei Yaakov says that's the shinimara that's a problem over here. That's the shinimara of black that's going to be a problem. Stam a black dot? He says a black dot, there's no reason to passel. So it goes back and forth. There are many poskim who say, stick to the brown dots. Don't take an esrog with a black dot. Because b'pshuto, the Rosh says that black is a shini mara, so maybe even a dot should be a problem. And others say no, based on the Trumas Hadeshim, it's mara esrog, it's no different than a bletel. If a bletel is mara esrog and it won't passel, black dot shouldn't passel either. According to the Bikurei Yaakov, if it's not black, machmas ibush, it shouldn't passel. So there are different approaches. How about green, yorok? So the Gemara, the Mishnah, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, quotes Machlokas Tanoim, where the Yorek Hekarti is kosher or pasul. Yorek Hekarti, green like a leek. We paskin that Yorek Hekarti is pasul. Tosfos quotes the Yerushalmi that that's only if it's Yorek Ki'isve Hasada, if it's so green that it looks like grace. It's a deep green, very, very deep green.
It's like what?
grass. Ki isve hasada. That's the one that's the problem. That's real green. But a light green, a lightish green, even a somewhat darker green, but if it's not ki isve hasada, it's not a problem. If it's Ki'isvi HaSada, then that's going to be possible. Why is it possible? Why is Giyara Ki'isvi HaSada possible? So that also is a Machlokas Achronim that the Mishnah Berurah quotes. Machlokas, what the reason is. This is in the Mishnah Berurah, Simen Tov, Resh Mem Chesiv, Katan Samachay, the first Mishnah Berurah that we started with. It's a very, very long Mishnah Berurah there. It's, I think, like page 2 in the Mar Makomis. No, it's not page 2. These pages are not numbered, so I can't help you. But it's page Kuf Yud Tes in the Shulchan Aruch. Very, very long Mishnah Berurah. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes that the Bach felt the reason why Yorah Ki'isvi HaSada is possible is because it's a Shinimar. Green is also a Shinimar, but just has to be green. Has to be green enough to be called a Shinimar. So the Bach says if it's Ki'isvi HaSada, it's a Shinimar. Magen Avraham says, no, it's not a Shinimar in the Esrog. The problem is, it's a Simen Ladover that the Esrog isn't ripe. It's Lo Nigmar Peir. What's a Nafkamina? The Mishnah Berurah says that the nafkamina is, let's say, we know, we're experts, we know that the esrog is going to turn colors. It's going to turn yellow. Right now it's fully green, but we know it's going to turn yellow. According to the Magen Avraham, if the psul is that it's not nigmar peira, then obviously it's nigmar peira, it must be ripe, because if it weren't ripe, it wouldn't turn colors. It only turns colors after you cut it off, if it's fully ripe. So that will indicate that it's fully ripe, even though it's still green, and it'll be kosher for the mitzvah, even when it's still green. According to the Bach, if green is a shinimara, it doesn't matter that it's going to turn colors. As long as it's green, that's called a shinimara in the esrog. It's not the way an esrog is supposed to look, so it's a shinimara, and it would still be possible. The Mishnah Berurah says, even according to the Magen Avraham, that yarok is possible because it's lo nigma peira, you should wait until it starts turning color a little bit. It should be a little bit yellow. It can have a little green on it, but it should be turning colors at least a little bit. It should be turning to yellow. Because we're not such experts. We're not going to be able to look at a green esrog and say, we know it's going to turn colors. It's hard for us to know. So that's why the Mishnah Berurah says better that we should wait until it starts turning colors. I'm sorry?
Can you say the Magen Avraham's svara again, please?
Magen Avraham's svara is that the esrog, if it's green, that might be an indication that the esrog is not fully ripe. So if we know that the esrog is going to ultimately turn yellow, then of course it's fully ripe, even now when it's green. So
the
fact that it will turn yellow means that it's fully ripe even now. So comes the Mishnah Berurah and says you should wait until it starts to turn yellow a little bit, because we're not such bekiyim to be able to look at an esrog that's completely green and to know that it's going to turn yellow. I guess there are certain simonim that the farmers have that they can look at it and see that it's going to turn yellow. But we're not such big bekiyim, so the Mishnah Berurah says you should wait until it starts to turn colors. How do we paskin? Before we get to the question, how do we paskin? So many achronim are mekel. Mishnah Berurah is mekel. He's mekel like the Magen Avraham to say that as long as it's a little bit yellow, then the esrog is kosher. The Bikur Yaakov is a big machmer. The Bikur Yaakov is machmer for the Bach. He says that green might be a shinimara, so you shouldn't take an esrog with any green on it at all, because if it has any green, that'll be a shinimara. Reb Chaim Volozhiner in a tshuva, he also passels in a green esrog. They point out it's not Reb Chaim Volozhiner, it's really the Mishnah Yaakov's tshuva. It's his Talmud. Some of the Mishnah Yaakov's tshuvas got mixed up in Reb Chaim Volozhiner's sefer. But someone, one of them, either the Rebbe or the Talmud, they also passel green. Reb Shechter is very machmer on this. He holds that if an esrog has any green, you got to be machmer for the Bach, and you shouldn't take that esrog. So it's very interesting. You look at all the pictures of the gedolim that they put up in the sukkah. Right? Many of them are taking green esrogim. So it's strange. Of course, the answer could be that it's not ki'isvi HaSada, that's not called green. Most of the esrogim they take, and it's not a deep green. It's sort of like a lightish green. I don't know. Rabbi Shechter would be much more machmas. So, you know, I'm not sure what is green and what is not green. You know, what is ki'isvi HaSada, what's not ki'isvi HaSada. I'm not such a bucky in grass. You know, there are different shades of greens. It's hard to know what color green is. Rabbi Shechter would be machmer. He doesn't like esrogim. He's mekel on a lot when it comes to dalamina, but not on this. He holds that you should be very careful that there shouldn't be any green on the esrog. Yes?
Just to clarify, the Magen Avraham's shita is that if it is green and it stops at that color, it will not turn yellow.
Right.
So that's the problem.
Right.
It kind of stop growing
Right. The problem is not the green. The problem is the green is a simen. It's not a siba, it's a simen. It's not that it's a siba's psul because it's a shinimara. It's a simen that the esrog is not fully ripe. It was plucked off the tree before it was fully ripe.
But the fact that it could turn yellow, if it will turn yellow, that would get...
That's enough to say that it's fully ripe. It will not have the opportunity to turn yellow if it weren't fully ripe when you plucked it off the tree. I know that sounds strange. If it's green, it's not fully ripe. No. It's fully ripe. It just hasn't finished producing its yellow color. But if it's not fully ripe, then it will not change to yellow. It'll stay green because it wasn't ripe when you plucked it off the tree. Yes.
That was
your kasha too? Okay, yeah.
That's what I wanted to clarify.
Okay, yeah.
It's a right.
Yeah. Right. Good.
Can
yes.
Can you talk about the Yemenite astrogam that they are always green?
I don't know much about them. They're always green and they're never going to turn yellow.
They're popular in Israel, and they're just green. Yeah.
Right. So there are estrogen that remain green throughout the Yom Tov, but if you watch them, they ultimately do turn yellow. They're supposed to turn yellow. And many of them do turn yellow as time goes on. When they start, you know, before they actually rot, they do turn colors. Right? They do turn colors. I never had such an estrogen to test, but... You should ask someone who takes the esrog, ask him to leave it after Yom Tov for a couple of weeks. You'll see the esrogim do turn colors. Because in fact, very often a person will take an esrog that's a little bit green, he wants to make it more yellow because it looks more beautiful. So they have all these ideas to put it with certain apples. You have to know exactly what type of apple, and you have to put it in the bag appropriately, because if not, you can destroy everything. The pitim will fall off. This is not for me. You know, I don't know. I can tell you one thing, that estrogen do change color. Over Yom Tov, you can buy it right before Yom Tov, Erev Yom Tov, or 2 days before Yom Tov. Within three, four, five days, you can have a significant color change. It's happened many times. I'm not at all surprised by that. So even the estrogen that are completely green, I would venture a guess that they'll probably start turning colors after Yom Tov. They're not going to end up green. I hope they're not going to end up green at the end, because then according to everyone, it's possible. Right? That's basically what we're saying. We paskin that Yarek HaKarati is possible. Even the Magen Avraham, who's Mekel, it's only Mekel because it's going to turn yellow. So if the Esrog does not turn yellow before rotting, it's Mizbar L'Mefreya that you weren't Yotze the Mitzvah if you took that Esrog on Yom Tov. So there are many things to think about with the Esrog. In deciding which Esrog to buy, which criterion is most important? Right, let's say you have an esrog that's completely clean on the chotem, but the gidol, the symmetry of the esrog, the way the esrog is growing, is not perfect. You know, typical esrog, it has a beautiful symmetry to it on both sides. So sometimes you can get an esrog that's perfectly clean on top. It doesn't have any spots, not black, not even brown. It's beautiful. Problem is, the esrog itself is not so beautiful. The symmetry is not so beautiful. So which is more important? Is the gidol more important, or is the nekiyus more important? So if you were to ask me, I would say that the gittel is more important, because that's more nicker lion. It's more recognizable. The poskim don't say that, right? The common approach of the poskim is to say that the cleaner it is, the more muhudr the esrog is. Even if the gittel is a little off, you know, it's turning to one side or whatever, the pitum is turning to one side, it's not completely up, the poskim would say nikiyus is the key. To be noki on the chotem is the biggest hiddur in the esrog. I don't fully understand it, but that's what the Mori Haroah say. They say that the cleaner it is on the chotem, the more mehudar it is. So what I try to do is I try to look for both, meaning I try to look for the nekiyus, but to look for a gidol also. To look for a gidol that's nice too. I think that's also a part of the mitzvah. It's also a hidden mitzvah. If you're looking for a beautiful esrog, then the chor, you should look for the gidol too, but the nekiyus is more important. The cleaner it is, the more mehudar it is. Rabbi Willig likes to say that when he goes shopping for esrogim, he takes, I don't know, 20, 30 esrogim to look over, and then he chooses a couple of them, chooses two or three, and then he presents these two or three esrogim to his wife, and he lets his wife choose the esrog that he takes for the mitzvah. Why? Because he says, look, I'll pass it on the cleanliness, I'll pass it on parts of the esrog, but to get a sense of the aesthetic beauty of the esrog, I'm not such a buck in the aesthetic beauty. My wife has a better sense of the aesthetic beauty of the esrog. And that's also a chelik of the mitzvah. To get a beautiful esrog means that people are going to look at it as beautiful. So he feels that his wife is a good judge of the beauty of the esrog. Okay, what's with the lulav? What are dinim that relate to the lulav? So first of all, a lulav is supposed to be fresh. It should be green. Sometimes the lulav starts to turn colors. It's turning a little whitish on the sides. Or some. It's not possible. It's not yavish. For a lulav to be yavish, it has to be brittle. You're not going to have a brittle lulav. I've never seen such a thing before. Right? Sometimes the tip of the lulav can get a little white, and the tips of the leaves are a little brittle. Okay. The lulav is supposed to be green. It's supposed to be fresh. It also should be shakeable. You should be able to shake the lulav, because the kiskus alim is part of the mitzvah. The nanuim is part of the mitzvah. You're supposed to be able to shake it. That doesn't just mean to move the lulav and esrog back and forth, but to actually shake the lulav. So you should be able to shake the lulav. What are things that passel in the lulav? So perhaps the most famous psul is what's called nechleka hatiyomis, if the tiyomis is split. What is a tiyomis? Before we understand what nechleka hatiyomis means, we first have to understand what a tiyomis is. So the Rif and the Rambam hold that a tiyomis is where each and every leaf of the lulav join together. Every leaf of a lulav is really a double leaf. The Rif and the Rambam claim that a tiyomis is where each and every one of those leaves join together. So nechleka hatiyomis, according to the Rif and the Rambam, is that rove of the alim of the lulav are split by the tiyomis, meaning the double leaf is split by rove of the alim. Because if the tiyomis is, if each one of the leaves has a tiyomis, so then how do we know that one of them is? It can't possible if one of them is split. It's only possible if rove of the tiyomis are split. But the Rush quotes a Tshuva from the Gaonim who says that a tiyomis is not, there is no tiyomis on every leaf of the lulav. It's the top, the middle leaf of the lulav with the shedra, right, that comes out of the shedra. The shedra is the spine of the lulav. So the shedra ends at some point where the leaves begin, right? The leaves are coming on the side of the shedra too, but the tiyomis, the middle leaf, comes out of the shedra. The Gaonim hold that nechleka hatiyomis means that middle leaf is split on the top. That tiyomis, that double leaf, is split, and those two leaves become two. Right? The one leaf that's really connected in the middle, they became like two leaves. That's a much bigger chumrah. So how do we pask it? Machlokas mechaber amah. The mechaber holds the nechleka hatiyomis is only in rov ha'alim. The mechaber paskas like the Rif and the Rambam. Sfardim are very megil for this, because I don't think there is a lulav that rove of the alim, the tiyomisin are going to be split. I don't think the lulav like that exists. You can check it out, but I just don't think. I don't think a mitzvah is going to exist. But the Ramah is machmer. The Ramah says even if the middle leaf is split, that is nechleka hatiyomis, and the lulav will be posel. The question is, how much does it have to be split for it to be posel? So I would have said rove, and that's what the Ritva says. He says rubo kakulo. It has to be split rove, meaning the area of the tiyomis from the tip of the lulav until the shedra. Because the tiyomis, the middle leaf, is coming out of the shedra. Right? So if nechleka hatiyomis means that leaf, that means rove of that rove of the area from the leaf until the shedra is split. Rove of that leaf is split. That's what the Ritva says. But the Ran has a chumrah. The Ran quotes the Yesh Omrim, that even if the tiyomis is split, b'miyuto, it's also possible. Even if it's b'miyuto, it's also possible. And the Ramah quotes this Ran. He says it's a mitzvah in amuvcha to take a lulav that the middle leaf isn't split at all. It sounds like even split b'mashehu might be a problem, according to this sheet. So this is like a chumrah gabi chumrah gabi chumrah. Right? First of all, that nechleka hatiyomis means the middle leaf and not a rove of all the leaves. Secondly, how much does it have to be split? Not rove, but rather a mashu. And why is nechleka b'mashu a problem? If you were to ask me, I'd say it's like chaser. It's not a lekicha tama. It's not full because it's split. It's not full. It's not what the Mishnah Berurah says. The Mishnah Berurah says it's like a chashash derabona, that we're afraid that if it's already split a little bit, then through the nanuim it'll be split rove. It'll get split rove, and rubo kakulo, that's going to be a problem. Sounds like it's only a din derabona, a chashash derabona. Yeah. But the Ramah says that one should be machmer for the Yesham and the Ran. So says the Mishnah Berurah, it's really a chumra. Because the reality is that we normally assume that rubo kakulo. The Gra says, since we assume rubo kakulo, b'mashu is not a problem. Split b'mashu is not a problem. What's more, even the Ran himself, the Ran quotes the Yesham, but he says, we don't have to be machmer for the Yesham. So you're beginning machmir for the Yesh-Omrim against the Ran's judgment. And what's more, the Mechaber assumes that this is not a problem anyway. If just the middle leaf is split, it's not a problem. So the Mishnah Berurah says, look, if you have two lulavim, one of them is split in the tiomus in the middle leaf, and the other one isn't. So of course if you have two possibilities, I would take the lulav that's not split. But if you don't have a lulav that the middle leaf is not split, the Mishnah Berurah says it's kosher. It's kosher. You can rely on the shittas that say it's kosher. So people try very hard to find a lulav that's not split in the middle at all. They try. It's hard. Now lulavim are much better. They have what's called a dairy lulav. It's a much thicker lulav. It's also more expensive. But it's much thicker, and because it's thicker, somehow it's able to withstand being thrown around. It's much better than the old lulavim. So it's much easier to find a lulav with a tiyomus that's not split nowadays if you're gonna buy a dairy lulav. A dairy lulav is more expensive. I don't know if you have to be machmir to buy such a lulav. But it used to be very, very difficult to find this. To find a lulav with that's not split at all used to be very difficult. It's not as difficult as it used to be. So if you can, and your wallet can handle it, so it's probably better to get that lulav to be machmir for what the Rambam says you should be machmir for, the Yesh-Omrim and the Ran. There are some who point out that maybe one should be careful that the lulav is not split at all for a different reason. And that is the Gemara says that Ovid Kehemnik is possible. Right? Ovid Kehemnik, if the lulav looks like a... Yes, question.
Where is this halacha? Between the Rama and the Shatna? Where is this halacha?
It's in Simen Tofresh Mem Hei Siv Gimel. In the second chelik of the Mar Makomis. Tofresh Mem Hei Siv Gimel. That's the Mechaber and Rama. So the Gemara on Daf Lamed Beis in Sukkah says that if Ovid Kehemnik, if the lulav looks like a fork, yeah, if the leaves are separate, if the tiomus is separate in a way that the two parts are nikar, zebifnei zeb. So even if you hold that Nechlaka HaTiomus is only posel berubo, but if it's Ovid Kehemnik, then that's going to be a problem. What does that mean? Ovid Kehemnik? It's separated in a way that you see a distance between them. So what's a hemnik? How much does it have to be separated that it looks like a fork? Meaning it looks like a pitchfork, I don't know, something. That the two sides of the leaf are separate. Levushe Srodah, in his commentary on the Taz, he has a very famous chiddush. He says that if it's Ovid Kehemnik B'mashu, it's possum. That means that the lulav is separated by the tiomus so much that you see it. You can see that the two parts of the leaf are not together, right? The shadra is somewhere down here. It's not rov of the tiomis, but you see that the two pieces separate from each other. The Marsham points out that very often, if you pick up a lulav and you look at it, you'll see that the tiomis is split, but if you put it down on the table, when the leaves come together, then you can't see anything. The leaves come together and the tiomis looks perfect. So he says that's not a hemnik. A hemnik means that no matter how you look at the lulav, those two leaves are separating from each other. That's a hemnik. But if it's not so bad, then it's okay. So that's why a lot of people look for a lulav that's not split completely, because they're so nervous that it shouldn't be ovik kehemnik. Even if nechlaka hatiomes is only posel berubo, but if it's ovik kehemnik, b'mashu is going to be a problem, and they don't know what that means, ovik kehemnik. How split does it have to be that we look at it like it's a fork, like it's separate? I don't know, Rabbeinu Chananel in the Gemara in Daf Lamed Beis, he has a picture. It's mamish like a fork. It's like a pellet. You know, he has like something coming out from the soy. Okay, that's really separate. You can see it, Nicker. I mean, we're talking about, you know, looking carefully. You can see it, but you got to look very carefully to see it. So some say, Levushei Srog claims that Ovid Kehemnik is possibly from the Mashu, so they try very hard to have a completely closed lulav. If you can, get the completely closed lulav, if it's possible. If not, at least get a lulav that's closed, even if you fiddle with it, don't fiddle with the top. Even if you open up the leaf, you open up the leaves on the side, and then you look at the top, so you might see that it's nechlak, you might see it split, but if you put it all together, then when the leaves come together, you won't see that it's split. So that's not Ovid Kehemnik, that certainly would be kosher. And b'dievet, if you can't find anything else, then the Mishnah Berurah says you can rely on that sheet that they say it's kosher.
Remember, yes. Made a quick before about the little needing to be shakeable.
Yep.
What does that mean? Meaning, my assumption initially was that there has to be some give within
the give doesn't have to be in the leaf. Each leaf is a double leaf. The give is between the leaves. Yeah, between the leaves, but not in the leaf. The leaves are supposed to stay together, or the middle leaf at least is supposed to stay together. If you shake a deri lula for the whole yomtiv, the tiyomus is not going to split. It stays together. I don't know. It's magic. I don't know. The deri lulav is just magical. It's really, it's a very hardy lulav. It's thicker. It's very hardy, and it stays together. It doesn't. It's. It can take a lot of wear and tear, and it doesn't get torn, and it doesn't. Doesn't split. Yeah.
A lot of people say, you know, it's very easy to find like a kosher esser, but it's impossible like a lulav.
That's what some people say, right?
Like, you don't know what a hemnet could be.
Right. You know what a hemnet could be. Right. That's why. Yeah. Sure. Yes.
According to this, the Gemara is teaching like the same psul, but two different lashonos. Like in Africa,
it's not the same psul, right? If you hold nechlega hatiyomis is possible b'miuto, even b'mashehu, so then yeah, we don't really fully understand what avikahemnik means, right? It must mean something else. Yeah, if nechlega hatiyomis means berubo, so then we understand that avikahemnik is adding an extra dimension here. There's something called kara. Kara is the brown stuff that you see on the lulav. I think that's how they spell it. Can you take a lulav with brown stuff on the top? So it's better not to. If you have brown, you can have brown stuff on the side of the lulav. That's not, you can take it off or whatever. It doesn't matter. But if there's brown stuff on the tip of the lulav, better not to take that lulav. Why? Because first of all, it's hard to know if the tiyomus is split. Maybe if you took off the brown stuff, you'd see that the tiyomus is split. So you're going to get yourself into trouble. It's a suffix that the tiyomus is split. What's more, you're not going to get the kiskus. You're not going to be able to shake the leaves. So you won't be able to be yotzei nanuim properly with that lulav. So it's better to avoid the lulav with the brown stuff on it. If it's on the tip of the lulav. Yes?
I was told that lulav with the brown stuff on it is the best one because of the chazaka that it's not split.
I don't think that's true at all. The post can say that's not true. It's not true because just because it hasn't been subjected to the wear and tear of the boxes in the same way as the others, that doesn't mean that it didn't grow split. There's no way of knowing whether it's split or not split unless you take the brown off. I've seen people take the brown off, and when they take off the brown, the tiyomus is split. Now you would say they split it by taking off the brown. I don't know. I think not. I think.
I've seen them many times. People are trying to check the lulav, and they literally split it and they put it back.
No, so that you can't do. That's hezek. That's gezel from the store owner. You can't do. So I told you the way to check a lulav is by separating the leaves on the side, not touching the top of the tiyomus. Separate the leaves on the top side and use your eyes and try to see the tiyomus. Don't split. If you move the leaves on the side, you haven't split anything. If you touch the middle leaf on the top, then you can split the tiyomus. But if you don't touch the leaf on the top, you're not. Don't fiddle with the top. Move the leaves on the sides and look at the tiyomus straight. You look at it straight, you'll be able to figure out whether it's split or not split. The other psul in a lulav is okum, kofuf. Let's say the lulav is bent, curved. So the Gemara says that if it's okum, doma lamagal, if it's curved like a sickle is pretty curved. Right, what's your typical sickle? Something like this, right? So if it's doma lamagal, so curved, so then it's a problem. So if you have a lulav that's, you know, it's curved to the sides, but it's curved toward the front. Sorry?
If it's sickly, you should
avoid it. If it's sickly, yeah. Very good. Right? If it's sicklish, if it looks like a sickle, then you should avoid it. If it's very curved, either to the sides or to the front. If it's curved toward the shedra, meaning toward the part that's coming toward you, because the way you take a lulav in esek is by holding the lulav with the shedra facing you. So if the shedra is curved toward you, that's kosher. Come on, happen to say that's kosher. Sometimes you find a lulav that's bent backwards, bent toward the shedra. That's kosher. It's not a problem. Normally, the curve that we have is not doma lamagal anyway, so that's why it's kosher. But it's doma lamagal is only kosher if it's curved to the sides or curved away from the shedra. The Gemara also says that the lulav kofuf, a bent lulav, is possible. What does it mean, a bent lulav? So, the Rosh actually writes in a tshuva, yes?
When we say it's bent, are we saying that the spine, let's say this spine is going like that, or are we saying that this spine is going like that?
The spine is bent. The spine is bent.
See,
not the leaves, the spine. Sorry?
It means spine bent in which direction?
Spine bent either to the sides or away from you. If you're going to hold the lula with the shedra facing you, it's bent away from, curved away from you.
So it's curved in any direction?
No. Only to the sides or curved away from you. But if it's curved toward you, meaning toward the shedra, that's kosher.
Okay.
only if it's curved away or to the sides. A lulav kafuf, a bent lulav, what does that mean? So the Rosh writes in a tshuva that if it's just bent on the top, and the Mefarshim explained that according to the Rosh, that means that the teomis is bent, that the middle leaf is bent, not that rove of the olam are bent. You have a little bit of a bend on top. The whole lulav is not curved. The whole shedder is not curved. Just a little bit of a bend on top. The Rosh says that that's kosher. He says, in fact, I like that kind of lulav. Sometimes you find a lulav that has a little bend on top. The Rosh says, I like that lulav. He says it's in a tshuva. It's what's called a kneppel. That's what the mochim call it, a kneppel. So if you have a lulav with a kneppel, the Rosh says that's even better, because you know for sure that the tshomis is not split. Then you know it's not split. With the kara, we're not so sure, but if they have a kneppel, then you know for sure it's not split. The Ran argues vehemently. The Ran says that even if it's kafuf in the middle leaf, that's pasul. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rosh. The Shulchan Aruch says it's kosher, but the Mishnah Berurah is macher for the Ran. So most Litvish people will not take a lulav with a kneppel. Chassidim might take a lulav with a kneppel. Bizman hazeh, there are Chassidim that are also machmir for the Mishnah Berurah. But it used to be that you come into the Mochrim and you say like a lulav. They say with a kneppel, without a kneppel. You got to know the language, right? So a Litvish person would not take a lulav with a kneppel because again, according to the Ran, that's going to be possible. That's a lulav kafuf. But according to the Rosh, it's better. It's not kafuf in a rove of the leaves. It's only kafuf a little bit in the middle. That's okay. Okay, what are some of the dinim of the hadas? So a hadas first of all has to be 3 tefachim. Moshe Feinstein says that a tefach is 3.6 inches. So 3 tefachim is 10.8 inches, right? 11 inches or so. Chazon Ish holds a little bit more than that, about 11.5 inches. That's what the hadas has to be. Most of our hadasim are going to be longer than that. About 11 or so inches, 11.5, 12 inches, something like that. How do we measure these 11 or 12? How do we measure the Gimel Tefachim? So the Mishnah Berurah, in Simet Tov Reish Nun, Sivkot Nala, quotes from the Ritva, that we measure the 3 tefachim in the stem. Not just the leaves. The way the hadas grows, the leaves come out of the stem. The top leaves, for a couple of inches, an inch and a half or so, or 2 inches, they come out of the stem. That doesn't come into the cheshbon. It starts from the first group of leaves. Right? You can't count the stem below the first group of leaves. That's just a stick. But from the first group of leaves on the bottom all the way to the end of the stem. You don't count the leaves on top. That's how the Chazon Ish explains, that we start from the first group of leaves on the bottom and we count all the way up to the top of the stem. That has to be 3 tefachim, not including the leaves on top of the stem. We know since the Pasuk says Anaf Eitz Avos, it calls a Hadas an Anaf Eitz Avos, so we know that the Hadas has to be Meshulish, it has to be a triplicate. They have to be Meshulashim, groups of 3 leaves in each cane, right, in each bundle, each group. What does it mean, Meshulash? So Rashi writes that the three leaves have to come out of the same ukitz, the same spot. Tosfos says that's a chumri yaseir, very, very hard to do, it's not going to happen. So they say as long as they're smuchim udvukim zebazeh, as long as they're close to each other, that's sufficient. Chazon Ish says, what does it mean, the smuchim udvukim zebazeh? He says, as long as you can draw a line across all of the different spots that the leaves are coming out of, that's okay. If you have a hadas and out of one spot, right, you have one leaf, and then you have another leaf coming out of over here, and a third leaf coming out over there, right? So they're not exactly coming out of the same spot. This one has an ukatz a little bit higher than that one, but if you draw a line, all of the uktsim, right, there's an ukatz that sticks the leaf of the hadas onto the stem. All of the uktzim are going to be united through that line. So the Chazon Ish says, that's smuchim with vukim zebazeh. They're not coming out of the same spot. That's not Rashi. But we don't have to be machmer for Rashi. As long as they're smuchim with vukim zebazeh, that's enough. That's enough to be called meshuloshim. How about if the leaves fall off? Question?
Sorry, can you run it? In terms of the line connecting all the eyes?
Let's draw it bigger. Okay, let's say have this uktz, and you have this uktz. And I can't go on the back, but let's say you have something that's growing over there, and it's gonna have an ukatz like this, right? So you have one leaf, another leaf, and another leaf, right? So are they coming out of the same spot? Doesn't look like it, right? But if you draw the line around, you'll see that all the ukas, this ukas goes from here to here, and that ukas goes from here to here, and that ukas goes from here to there. So you can draw a line, and all the ukas are going to be invited. Okay, that's called smuchim with the ukas of Mizrach. Let's say the leaves fall off. Is it still called meshulish? There's a major machlokas. How many leaves can fall off, and it's still called meshulish? Some say that even if one leaf falls off, and you're lacking meshulish in one of the groups of leaves, then the whole hadas is possible. The Rambam goes to the other extreme. The Rambam says that even if you have one cane, one grouping of three leaves together, it's kosher. And the middle of the road is how we go, that l'chatchila you should have kula meshulish, but with the evet, even if it's only rove, that's also okay. The Pshuto, the Rambam, the Sefer Emek Brochas explains that the Rambam holds that the idea of meshulish is it's a din in the shame of the hadas. The min of a hadas has to be meshulish. So if you don't have any leaves, then it's just a stick, that's not called a hadas. But as long as you have one group of leaves that's meshulish, that has a shame hadas, that's it. That's all you need. All you have to know is that this stem, this hadas, is called a hadas. So as long as it has one group, it has a shame hadas, that's enough. The others hold that meshulish is a din in the... is a tnai in the kiyum ha-mitzvah, that it has to be meshulish. And the shaila is, do you need kula meshulish, or is ruba meshulish sufficient for the mitzvah? So shaila had a look at meshulashim. Is the din meshulish a din in the shem hadas, or is it a din in the kiyum ha-mitzvah? What are some of the dinim of the arava? So the pasuk says, arvei nachal. So the Gemara daf lamed gimel amud beis says that hagedelim al hanachal. The pshuto, the aravas are supposed to grow on the... by the nachal. But the Gemara says, arvei mikol makom, arvei nachal mikol makom, the plural arvei comes to be marbe, that an arova that doesn't grow by the nachal is also kosher. But some say it seems from Rashi that the mitzvah and the mufcher is to choose dafka arovas that grow by the nachal. We're not machmer for this. The Mishnah Berura quotes the Rosh that says that the arovas don't have to come from the nachal. As long as they grow, as long as they have the simonim that the arova is supposed to have, that's kosher. So what taka are the simonim? So Gemara Lamed Daled says that the arava is supposed to have three simanim. First of all, that its stem is supposed to be red. Secondly, the leaf should be elongated. It should be moshuch. Moshuch, it shouldn't be circular. It should be moshuch. It should be elongated. The leaf of the arava should be elongated. And thirdly, the edge should be smooth. It shouldn't be serrated. It shouldn't be jagged. Those are the three simanim that the arava is supposed to have. But the Ramah... quotes on the Beis Yosef that it doesn't really have to have a red stem. The arava can also have a green stem. The only thing that passes is a white stem. So our aravas don't always have a red stem. Some of them only have green. Beis Yosef says if the arava has a green stem, that's okay. It doesn't have to have a red stem. Many have a red stem, but as long as it's not white, that's okay. What if the arava lost its leaves? So the Mishnah Berurah says, Niktam Rosh, if the arava is cut off on top, or if most of the leaves dry out, or if rove of the leaves fall off, then the arava is possible. But comes the Magen Avraham and says, l'chatchila, you should have an arava that doesn't have any of the leaves falling off. Have all the leaves on the arava. So therefore, you should be careful when you put the aravas in the koshikol, be careful to put it in such a way that the leaves are not going to fall off. You're going to spend so much time trying to check aravas to get an arava without leaves that have fallen off, then you're going to put it in the koshikol, in the holder, and the leaves are going to fall off, you're going to lose the point. So try very hard to put it in the koshikol in a way that the arava will keep all its leaves. Some are medaktek to get what's called a lavluf. That's the top of the arava has like a little wisp. I'm not sure how to call it. It's almost like a wisp of hair growing out of the top of the arava. What's the chumrah, what's the minig to get an arava with a lavluf? The answer is, when it has a lavluf, so that's the siman that it's not niktam roshim. You know for sure it's not nikdam. So some have there's a chumrah, some have a minik to try to get a lavluf. Most don't, and if you don't have a lavluf, it's also kosher. Okay, these are the basic halachas of the Galamim. There's a discussion in the Gemara about hiddur mitzvah. You know, the Gemara Bava Kama Daftes says that hiddur mitzvah is at shlish b'mitzvah, that you're supposed to spend up to a third of the mitzvah. The question, how to cheshbin the third, right? Do you have to add for hiddur mitzvah a third of the total, or do you add on a third of the original mitzvah? Meaning, let's say you can buy a set of dalaminim for $30. right? So is hidden mitzvah that you have to spend another $10 on a mitzvah until 40? Or does hidden mitzvah really mean that you have to spend not a third, but rather a half, so that when you have the whole thing, what you spent extra is a third, meaning to spend 45. You have to spend 45 so that the 15 that you spent is really a third of the total. It's basically a shaila, do you have to spend a third more or a half more? That's basically the shaila. So either way you slice it, you don't have to spend that much for a set of dalaminim. Right? A kosher set of dalaminim, you probably get a kosher set for $30, for $35, I imagine. Maybe now it's a little more expensive, $40. So how much more do you have to spend for hidden mitzvah? Not more than $10, $15, $20 more. So you don't have to buy a lulav and eser for $80, $90, $100. You don't have to spend that much money even for hidden mitzvah. Some suggest that that if a person, you know, spends money for other things freely, if he has the money, then it is a hidden mitzvah to spend more. It's not like it's usa to spend more. The question is whether you have a chiyav to spend more. So if a person spends, you know, if the person is going to go on a vacation, chalamoid sukkahs, and spend a lot of money, you know, on that vacation, it's not such an avla to spend a little bit more for the mitzvah. Right? Even though technically speaking, the hidden mitzvah is only a third of the mitzvah, but it's probably appropriate to spend a little bit more money on the mitzvah if you can afford it. But if a person can't afford it, then he doesn't have to spend the extra money. He shouldn't drive himself crazy. Sometimes people feel, I have to spend $120 on a set of dalaminim, you know, and he doesn't have the money. So if a person doesn't have the money, they shouldn't be spending the extra money. But someone who does have the money, then many poskim will say that it is appropriate to try to spend a little bit more to get a better set of dalaminim. Yes?
I heard a logic that if you are doing it out of a suffix, like maybe it's more or whatever, that would make sense because you want to make sure you have an esrog. But if it's just for like a shash, make sure that you want to spend that extra $20, put it to a bad end, so like, say, I know for sure.
Right, you can give tzedakah. Rabbi Shachter always says, buy a set of dalaminim and biyotze the concept of hidden mitzvah, give the rest for tzedakah. Right? He's very adamant about that you shouldn't be spending extra money on dalaminim. He doesn't like the fact that they spend $150 on a set of dalaminim. Yeah, I understand, but there are some people that, you know, they work very hard. They want to feel good about a mitzvah. So and they give a lot of tzedakah.
Right.
But it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. They want to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they care about the mitzvah, and they'll feel differently about the mitzvah. So to tell them that you have to spend all the extra money on tzedakah, it's hard for them to swallow that. So I think for such a person, if you have the money and you'll spend a lot on the tzedakah, then you can spend money on this mitzvah too. Yes.
So should we say then that a person who doesn't have so much money, they have enough money to buy the basic mitzvah. We should say that they shouldn't go over the top, that they should be usher from doing so, like by tzedakah.
But they still have a din of hidden mitzvah. It's appropriate to be mahadal the mitzvah. So you should spend more. I mean, if a person doesn't have the money, then they can buy the basic mitzvah. I think most individuals can get the money for the hidden mitzvah also.
But not past the maximum of tzedakah.
The maximum of tzedakah. Well, chomesh?
Meaning,
the Gemara says you shouldn't be mevazbez on a mitzvah more than chomesh nechosav. I hope, right? I mean, a fifth of, I mean, $150, that's all the person has in his bank account. If that's what we're talking about, so then he doesn't have to spend more than that. But I think we assume that people have a little bit more money, so then they're able to spend more for the mitzvah. But again, a person doesn't have to overextend themselves. Every person has a personal shaila. They should speak to a rav, and he should evaluate how much money they really should spend for the mitzvah. They shouldn't overspend, but they should spend an appropriate amount. We paskin that dvar Torah mos konos, that minat Torah, when a person acquires something, he can do that with kesef. But the chachamim have a gzera. I'm not going to get involved in the details of the gzera, but the chacham have a gzera. They say meshicha should be koneh. You should be koneh by pulling, not through kesef, because we're afraid of something. Not for now. It's a gemara above metzia. So the question is, when you come to a mitzvah daraisa, maybe you should be careful that meshicha is not going to be koneh. For a mitzvah daraisa, since the Torah mo is koneh, so you should be careful dafka to be koneh with mo. So that's what the Machmer Ephraim writes in Hilchas Kinyan Meshicha. He says that maybe you should be machmer dafka to use kesef to buy the dalad minim. Because dalad minim is a mitzvah deraisa, at least on the first day of Yom Tov. So if you don't buy with kesef, you only buy with meshicha. Midrabanan, you own the dalad minim, but it's not lochem on a deraisa level. So maybe you should use dafka kesef. And then there's a further discussion the poskim have. What's the din of a check? Is a check considered kesef or not called kesef? So many people take out money. They take out cash. They take out cash from the bank, and they bedafka buy the dalad minim with the cash. Now, of course, if the mocher cashes the check, which very often they cash all the checks every single day, Right? So if the mocha cash is the check, that's as good as giving him cash. What we're afraid of is that you'll give him the check, and sometime on Yom Tov he'll have time to cash the check. So if the check is not considered kesef, then maybe you're not being koneh the dalim minim minatorah. Rabbi Shechter felt that this is not necessary. Because bizman hazeh, that we bring the dalim minim home, we bring it to a chotzer, we bring it to a bayis, the bayis is koneh minatorah. So even if the kesef is not koneh on the deris level, the chotzer is going to be koneh. So if you're a balabas who owns a home, and the chotzer is going to be koneh for you, so then you don't have to worry about paying with cash. If you're a yeshiva bacher, and you live in the dormitory, you don't really have a makom, you don't have a chotzer, so then if you want to be machmer, then you can buy the dalaminim with cash, and then you'll make sure that that you'll own the dalaminim even on a deraisa level. Okay, just a few halachas about the mitzvah of netilas lulav. The Gemara in Daf Lamed Zayin Amid Beis in Sukkah says that lulav biyamin ve'esrog v'smol. You're supposed to hold the lulav, the three minim in the right hand, and the esrog in the left hand. The Beis Yosef quotes the Orchas Chaim, who wants to say that if you hold the lulav and esrog, if you hold all the dalet minim in one hand, you're not going to be yotzeh, because the Gemara in Daf Lamed Dalet Amid Beis says yochol yehi esrog yimoyin v'aguda achas. I'd have a hava minim. Maybe the esrog should be Baguda achas with the other minim, kamash vola, no. The esrog is supposed to be separate. You're supposed to hold the three minim in one hand, the esrog in the other hand. So the Yerchas Chaim says, you see from that Gemara that if you hold everything in one hand, you're not going to be yotzei. Others say, no. That's not what the Gemara meant. The Gemara meant that you're not allowed to tie them together. You can't. I would think that you have to put the esrog baaguda achas with the other three minim, kamash vola, no. But there's no problem with holding them in the same hand. If they're not baaguda achas, then that's fine. You have to have three minim separate, I mean together, but not with the esrog, and then you have the esrog separately. The halacha, the Mishnah Berurah, says that you should be machmer if you can. Rabbi Shechter, Nefesh HaRav, quotes that the Magen Avram holds it even during Hallel, Hoshanas, you should also be careful to hold the lulav and esrog in separate hands. And he says that was the minig and brisk that someone used. They didn't have these inventions of the Hoshanas, you know, that you can wrap around your arm and hold the lulav and esrog in two separate hands. So they used to have someone walking behind the Shliach Tzibur in brisk with a sitter. So if he'd walk behind the Shliach Tzibur, and the Shliach Tzibur had the Lulav and Esrog in two different hands, they didn't want him to hold the Siddur in one hand and the Lulav and Esrog in the other hand. They had someone walking behind him. If this weren't described in the Sefer, I wouldn't believe it. But that's apparently how they did it in Brisk, that there was someone walking behind him to make sure that the Shliach Tzibur would hold the Lulav and Esrog in two different hands. What does a lefty do? Machlokes the Mechaber Ramah, whether he follows his right hand as opposed to everyone else's right hand, meaning his strong hand. Does he hold the lulav in his left hand, or does he hold the lulav in his right hand? The Ramah holds that he should switch hands. He holds it in his strong hand, just like by tefillin. So the lefty, according to the Ramah, would hold the lulav in his left hand and the esrog in the right hand. But since it's a machlokas, so some lefties have the minhag that after davening they switch hands to make sure that they yotzei both ways. That's what a lefty does. And finally, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim have a machlokas with a lulav tzarech eged or lulav ain't tzarech eged. Does lulav have to be tied? We passing that lulav ain't tzarech eged, but because of zekeli van veyu, the Chachamim hold lechatchili is supposed to be ma'aged a lulav. What does it mean to be ma'aged a lulav? So the Ramah quotes an interesting minig that they would simply wrap a string around, or wrap a lulav string around. You don't really have to use a lulav string. You don't have to use one of the minim. You can use anything. You can use a rubber band too. Well, I'm not sure if you can use a rubber band. You can use anything as long as it's a noy, as long as it's beautiful. I'm not sure if a rubber band is really so beautiful. But it doesn't have to be a chelik of the dalet minim as long as it's a nice thing. So we use the lulav string. The Mishnah Berurah says the minig is to make three rings around the lulav and then you wrap all the minim together. Just one second. But the Ramah, the Mishnah Berurah says that really, Meikar Adin, you should have a kesher agabe kesher. You should have a kesher agabe kesher. You shouldn't just wrap it and stuff the end of the lulav string into the wrapping, but rather you should make two knots, a kesher agabe kesher, because if not, that's not called a knot, that's not called an asi, it's not called an egen. And even though we passed in that lulav ain't tzarech eged, l'chatchila, you're supposed to have an asiyah. Even according to the Chachamim, you're supposed to have an asiyah. The asiyah requires a kesher agabe kesher. So that's what some people are taka knowing, that the lulav string that they put around the koshikol, the holder, they don't just wrap it around and then stuff it in, but rather that piece of lulav, they actually knot in the normal way, right? They knot it up. They tie it, like you tie a shoelace. They tie it, And then they tie it again, a kesher agabe kesher. All the other rings that they put around the lulav, they just wrap it around and then they stuff it in the back. Some people are makbid that they should make a kesher agabe kesher for that one lulav string that actually holds all the dalanim together. They hold the koshikol itself, the holder, is not an egin. You're not making the koshikol, you're just stuffing the minim into the koshikol. So they hold it, you have to wrap something around it to tie all the minim together, but they assume, l'chumra, that you have to make a kesher agabe kesher, so that's why they make a knot on top of a knot. They don't just wrap the string around and stuff it in, but rather they make a knot on top of a knot to make sure that it's a kesher gun. Okay, we'll stop here. If you have any further questions, I'll listen to this.